This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by Casa Valencia, the radio show that spawned from the 23,000-plus local-strong Otipoti Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group has been putting the social back in the social media since 2020 with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we're talking to our wonderful guest, Paul McClellan-Smith, Director of Art Centre, who'll be telling us a bit more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that generated the most interactions over the past 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. And those posts this week are the university getting the go ahead to demolish the Archway Lecture Theatres, central government giving local government a 3-month ultimatum to sort out their own restructure or they'll do it for them, and an interesting encounter with a TUI at the Botanic Gardens. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Kia ora, glad to be here.
Fantastic. And thank you for stepping in at short notice. I really appreciate that. So before we get started on this and the news and talking about yourself, we have a – I don't know if you're in the What's News Dunedin Facebook group or
oh,
not.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, oh, you are. That's fantastic. We have Punday Monday. There's not one that you've ever taken part in, but Punday Monday is where we bring all our best dad jokes. Best dad jokes, puns, and then the funniest one, and that is literally determined by the number of laugh reacts it gets – comes on the show on Friday. So we're seeing whether the joke comes off the page and is pun worthy when it's in the, using the spoken word, right? So this week's pun of the week is, and it happened to be on Monday, was May the 4th. So it was Star Wars Day. So actually all the puns were all Star Warsy puns, which is even better still. So pun of the week this week was, my friend decided to get a face tattoo of her favourite Star Wars character. You should have seen the Luke on her face.
Ooh.
It's a groaner.
It is a groaner.
So, but I just that just makes the pun even better in my mind. To be completely fair, like, if you're going to groan at a pun, it's worthy. Before we get started on the news for the week, what we also have is our three pop questions. So these are just three questions that I throw at every single guest that comes on the show. No right or wrong answers unless you get them wrong. But basically, just get under the skin of Paul the person before we even start talking about anything else. Right. So. First question, cream teas. So you have a scone, you have jam, you have cream. What goes on the scone first, the jam or the cream?
Always the jam for me.
That's the right answer, mate. That's genuinely.
I can't imagine doing it the other way. It would just get a bit messy, wouldn't it?
Well, it doesn't scientifically make any sense to me, because how do you spread jam on cream?
Maybe it's been invented by cafes to reassure people that actually there is jam under there.
Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I mean, that's the right answer. In back in the UK, it's a big thing between Devon and Cornwall.
Okay.
Like one lot do it the wrong way, which is Devon, and they put the cream on first and dollop jam on the top. And then the Cornish, lovely folk, we like them, they do it the right way, which is the jam and then cream.
Right. Well, look, I must try it out the other way. I've never experienced this.
I don't think you should go to the dark side. We are on Star Wars week, so there is a, you know, that is the dark side. So we'll try it. I mean, just stay away from it. I mean, it's just in case you like it, mate. I mean, then what do you do, right? You know, so there's, you know, all those questions. You can't get any other questions wrong on my show. So that was the first one. Mm-hmm. That's the only one you could get wrong. You've got it right. Great start. Mm-hmm. The next ones are easy, all right? So second question, who is your favourite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Oh, goodness me. Well, look, I only remember the name of one. I mean, this is...
Well, that'll do.
This is kind of before... Is it before my time? I was sort of grew up with things like Smurfs and
so then after your time, mate.
Yeah, after my time. Sorry, you're right. I'm older. I'm older than this. But I remember the name of D'Angelo.
You're wrong.
Eh?
Donatello, Michelangelo.
Oh, Michelangelo.
Because they're all Renaissance painters. Michelangelo, Donatello, Leonardo, and Raphael.
Okay.
Because they're all Renaissance painters.
Right. Well, that just shows my ignorance.
Exactly. But even still, there's no wrong answer with the turtles. Every turtle was a great turtle, right? It's as simple as that. You could have even gone for April the Reporter, or even Master Splinter the Giant Rat. That I'm moosophobic, so I wouldn't go for them.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I wonder how the Ninja Turtle thing resonated in the Pacific, because you know turtles are such a icon of the Pacific in terms of their imagery.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not so much in New Zealand, but you know.
Oh yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. But they changed in the UK. They changed the name.
Oh.
So it was they started off life as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then someone didn't like the connotation of the ninja stuff. So they went Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Oh.
But of course, they're still swinging nunchucks around and spears and all that kind of stuff. And then they went back to, eventually went back to...
Because it was a dumb idea
because
anyway.
Because Hero Turtles, they were still ninjas. So they went back to Ninja Turtles later on. So they've kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it was kind of just about in my kind of era. I do remember the Smurfs too. Big fan of the Smurfs. It was like Saturday night TV viewing in the UK. We just go and watch the Smurfs, which is fantastic. And then the third and final question is a bit of a thinker. All right. So would you rather go on a double date with your parents or your ex and their new partner?
Ooh. That is a tricky one in a way. My mum's passed away, sadly. If she was still about, I might choose her, but I've got quite a good relationship with my ex, so probably that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I mean, my dad's passed, but I would definitely choose my mum and dad as a double date because I love them to pieces, actually, rather than the worry for me.
I mean, it is a bit of a weird one.
Of an ex.
But when you have children in common, you hope
that's slightly different. It's slightly different.
That you still get on.
Yes.
And if you do, it's good for everyone. So to some extent, you've got to, I mean, for the sake of everyone, you've got to get on with it and just try and make it work.
Yep.
And, so for me, I'm fortunate that we still get on reasonably well.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great answer. So there's no right or wrong answers here. It's just it's just all for a bit of fun. Now, want to talk about the three topics of the week, and then once we've done that, we'll talk about you and Art Centre and everything around that. But the first topic is the university getting the go-ahead to demolish the Archway Lecture Theatres. Now, the sort of backstory to this is that they wanted to do it, and then someone came forward and kind of claimed heritage status, and then kind of that was they weren't allowed to, and then they've kind of I think they've gone to the Environmental Court, and the Environmental Court have come back and gone no, we're okay, you can knock it down and put in a planned garden or whatever, which is met with some opposition from a number of people, including I think Ted McCoy's daughter. Ted McCoy was the architect that designed. He's passed now, but he was the architect that designed the Archway Lecture Theatres.
Oh, was he?
Apparently,
and
so.
He's done quite a lot of historic renovations around town, like the Standard Kitchen.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. A lot of Ted McCoy property all over the place.
I might be thinking of someone else.
I don't know what he's like, but again, I don't know when he passed. But his daughter is fronted a petition to sort of say, let's keep the Archway Lecture Theatres. Now, it's one of what they call brutalist architecture, and it is ugly.
Yeah,
like you can't look at it and go, ooh, that's a pretty building. But it does have a place in like the history of architecture, I guess.
Mm.
So where do you fall on that? Because I'm kind of like I don't know enough about architecture and sort of, to be honest, like Dunedin heritage to kind of really have an opinion other than the fact I think the building looks ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen a book on brutalist architecture at my work, and some of them are just so striking, like just quite space age. It was almost futuristic,
yep.
and it was pared back, but the design of some of them are just outstanding, and I do think they should be preserved to some extent. Obviously, you can't preserve every building, but there does need to be some examples of modern practice, and especially if it's a good example.
Yep.
And I think I would hope that if you looked at Dunedin, is there some good examples of it left? And is this one a good enough example to keep? I'm not 100% sure on that, but I do remember being disappointed. Like, I spent a lot of time in Hamilton, and there was this building that had these – it was very 80s. It had these big – if you can imagine a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
As the outside of a building, and it's got those big curved bits of the chocolate bar, right? And they were protruding out from the building, and they were multicolored. And it was just so strikingly of its time
yep.
that I always thought it should have been saved, but it wasn't.
But it didn't.
And I think that's a shame.
Because you never get them back, though. That is the thing, isn't it? I mean, if you walk around the university, there is some fantastic architecture. Mm. And you can genuinely look at, you know, especially like the Clock Tower building and all those kind of places, and you'd kind of go, almost everyone to a man would kind of go, you don't pull that down, it's beautiful, right? But that shouldn't necessarily be the defining criteria, should it, to be fair?
And I've heard that David Kilgour is one of those who is opposing the demolition. And I wonder if, he's a famous Dunedin musician. I wonder if that's because, there's some link with, artists and musicians who have utilised that structure in some of their music videos or something like that. Whether it's become iconic, obviously for him it has.
Well, I think it is. I mean, it's certainly a building that, I spent quite a lot of time on campus when I first got here because I worked for a company that sold stuff to the university. And it's a building that sits in my brain, right? Not because I walk past it going, oh, I love that. I used to get lost in it because, I used to go in there and it's all very much the same when you get inside. But at the same time, it's a building that you remember.
Yeah.
For the right or the wrong reason. So I guess it's very personal, I think, whether you support bringing it down or you don't.
And I think we've got to be careful that we don't slip into, it's got to be pretty old buildings. Architecture is more than that. It is about the impact it makes on you in a space. And sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it can be dehumanizing. Mm. And, you don't necessarily want to keep everything, but it's multi-layered, and it's a interesting argument anyway.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens because they have brought a petition, and it'll be interesting to see how many signatures they get. It'll be interesting to see if anyone listens to the feedback once it's presented too, because obviously the university itself has a vision of what it wants in that space already, you know?
Well, it reminds me of the St. David Street Bridge, which has a huge history of the community trying to save this little walk bridge. It's beautiful. It's a historic, beautiful little Victorian walk bridge that, where they've got the big new welcome to Otago University sign by the, Centre of Innovation there.
Yep.
Basically, they wanted to put a road through to the registry building across the Leith, and this little walk bridge was in the way, and they wanted to move it, they wanted to do all sorts of things, but the community said no. This is where it is, this is important, to keep it as it is, to keep the feel of that whole area and keep it people focused rather than about cars and dignitaries coming through and zooming through the university and their big cars or whatever, or buses, or it's of a similar vein, this whole discussion.
I think so, definitely. Well, let's move on to the next topic anyway, because I think basically the answer from us is the jury's out. We're going to see what happens. I won't be sad if it goes, and I won't be sad if it stays, if that makes sense. I'm kind of on the fence. The next topic of the week, and this is something that's come out of left field, I think, is central government make an announcement this week that they've been talking about the reform of councils and stuff. So they want to get – Shane Jones has made a very big noise about, the Kremlin of the ORC, the regional council, and they want to get rid of regional councils, make things a bit more collective. And they spent three years, kind of talking about it and actually doing very little other than kind of announcing it was coming. And then suddenly in the last week they've jumped up and said, well, you guys, you local councils, you got 3 months to figure out a plan on how you're going to merge together with each other, or we're going to do it for you. Which just seems like such a weird, it's such a weird flex from their point of view when you consider that they've achieved literally no momentum in 3 years, and then suddenly they're expecting councils, on top of everything else that they're doing, to actually suddenly go, oh yeah, we'll figure that one out ourselves, and for some reason expect there to be some kind of consistency across the whole damn country when they do that.
It's not leadership, is it? And it's a very poor form of it's not even consultation, really. I wouldn't call that fair consultation, and it's an approach which is very top down, which is something that I guess people who favour retaining councils do point out that it's democracy. It's a chance for people to have a say. The thing that worries me, apart from the government's process and attitude to the regional councils, is regional councils are unique. They look after the landscape and the air, the water quality, and all those things. City councils don't do that. And there's reasons for that, because city councils are very parochial. It's all about their rates and their roads and everything like that. Whereas regional councils are about the catchment, and catchments go across boundaries.
Exactly.
And so you've got to have a broader view. Otherwise, there's just no real, that relationship with the environment gets completely shattered, really. And I think the other thing that's vital about regional councils is the relationship with mana whenua, who also think in a catchment and landscape and in a different way about the environment. So I think it would be a major step backwards to just get rid of them. And to foist that onto a whole lot of small city councils who are already overstretched, over budget, and beyond their means. So I think it's a real backward step. And that's not to say in some areas there might be too many councils, but it might be too many city councils, not necessarily regional councils.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely a call for reform. Mm. Right, the last reform was 1989, which is what's got the current structure of city council, district councils, unitary and regional councils. There's definitely a call for reform. I mean, any council, I think, would sit there and go, "Yeah, we're open to change. We're open to, but this doesn't feel like it. This just feels like a sledgehammer to crack a walnut kind of thing." And it doesn't actually, with little direction as well. That's the other side of it. Is the struggle there that actually you're being told you can't. They even said you can't go and get consultants to help you because we don't want you spending money to do it. So it's like, well, hang on a second. Like, how are you expecting 3 months anything of any substantial viability to come out of that conversation? You barely got enough time to talk to your people. You're not allowed to employ anyone else to help you with that. And if you don't do it properly, we're going to do it. Well, you could have done it properly, and it's just mad.
And the concern I have also with the Otago Regional Council is you've got councillors on there leading that organisation who actually want it to dissolve. They want to get rid of it. And they don't see the value of it. And I think that's quite a dangerous situation.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm quite worried about that.
Me too. Let's talk about something a little bit brighter. And that was it was a post on the group about a young man who had a very interesting interaction with the Tui at the Botanic Gardens. So he's there enjoying the sunshine. We've had some nice days in the last couple of weeks. And basically, like, Tui lands on him, interacting with him, very, very friendly bird, which has brought a large amount of delight to that individual. However, the flip side of that is what's come from some of the people in the group, and there's bird rescue on the page and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Happens to be an injured bird, a bird that was injured, all right, and has been
the same bird or different?
So this is the same bird, right? The bird that's doing this and interacting with humans has been released after being what they hope was rehabilitated.
Yeah.
But unfortunately has managed to sees humans as friends.
Yeah.
Which is actually a bad thing for wildlife, right? Whilst we love our taonga species and we love our animals that we've got around us, actually there needs to be a separation, right? Because ultimately, and this is the point that's being made on the page, it's great, you had a fantastic interaction, but actually you need to be shooing that bird away and actually discouraging that interaction, because otherwise it's detrimental to the bird. It could actually mean that it relies too much on humans and doesn't seek its own food, so it doesn't seek a partner, doesn't seek breeding, and therefore actually life is shortened for that bird because of the fact that it's become domesticated and it shouldn't be. And straight away I'm like, well, I would love it if a bird come and sat on my shoulder, right? Genuinely, I'd be like, oh, that's fantastic. But then I did see the flip side. So it's like, it's one of those, where does that leave us?
Well, I think it's best not to get too tied up in knots about it. I think it's one bird, and you know, that interaction with the bird, it could bring a lot of joy to a few people, right?
Agreed.
And
agreed.
I mean, I've been on a walk recently, and you know how the little pi waka waka follow you everywhere.
Oh, good, yeah.
And it's so cool to see. It's so fun, and it's that engagement. So it's an interesting one. I kind of think it's a good thing for people to be aware of, a bit, you know, not to encourage it overly generally. But I think it's a bit of a one-off situation, and so I don't think it's worth getting tied up in knots over personally, because it's quite unusual.
Yes. Yeah, it would be, you know, not many birds that once they're rehabilitated would, most birds once they're rehabilitated would go back into the wild and actually go and do their wild thing. You know, that's the important, that's what you're putting them there for. Mm. But this is one where obviously it's found an interesting way to kind of like, you know, sneak past the, you know, going and finding food itself and foraging. It's kind of going to come and just, you know, tap you on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And just say,
it kind of shows how clever they are, really, doesn't it?
They're smart animals. Birds. They say bird-brained, but actually, I think birds. I think birds are actually like. But they use bird-brained and sort of talk about, you know, being stupid. But yeah. I mean, I've got chickens. There's nothing stupid about my chickens. Like, they genuinely like some. Don't get me. Some days they're very stupid, but in general, right? Mm. They know when it's food time. Yeah, they know. Yeah. They watch the humans. They line up outside the window and look into the house.
They'd come in and help themselves if you gave them half the chance.
Well, chickens do come inside the house, and then you get poo everywhere. It's like horrible. But anyway, they're smart animals, you know, generally. But anyway, I want to talk about you and Art Centre and other bits and pieces in a second. But before we do, I'm going to get a word from our wonderful sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
Have you been to Casa Valencia?
Yeah, I have. Only once, actually. But I bought the most amazing, I think it was like a croissant or something. But yeah, beautiful pastries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're literally like three doors down from where I work on Musselburgh Rise. So I'm there every day.
Right.
Like genuinely, literally every single day.
Have you got a favourite thing?
Empanadas.
Oh, yeah.
I just walk in there and they look at me and they go, one of each. They do like a chicken empanada and a beef mince empanada.
Okay.
And very different. One's in puff pastry, one's in short crust pastry. And they just literally look at me, one of each. And I'm like, yeah. And they bag them up.
Right.
I'm in and I'm gone. And very reasonably priced, too. So that's like, you know, they're just like fantastic. And there's wonderful people. That's the other side of it as well. I'm a big believer that food can be cooked with love.
Mm.
And their food is cooked with love, and you can taste it.
Yeah,
you know, genuinely. So that's a wonderful thing. So if you have, I mean, if anyone has listening, get yourself down there because it's some fantastic food. Always good. So now I want to talk about you. I want to talk about. I know you've stepped in very at last minute for us, which is fantastic. And cards on the table. You and me know each other already because we both sit on the board of the Dunedin Midwinter Carnival Trust. But you're here as director of Art Centre. So perhaps for people, I mean, again, we've had some of our trust meetings in the Art Centre premises, right? Mm. But even to me, like until recently, I didn't know that the place existed, what it was about, until we met each other, obviously. So maybe give the listeners a bit of a rundown of where things are. And we're in the 40th year, aren't we? This is a special year for you. So,
yeah,
so maybe you give us a little bit of a rundown of how you and Art Centre got to where it's got to, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah, it is quite interesting how many people don't know about Art Centre, despite it being around for 40 years.
Yes.
And that is partly because we operate a little below the radar. We're a mental health and addiction service. We're a small non-profit. We don't have big advertising budgets. But we're also, you know, creating a space that's like a safe, stigma-free space for people who are facing mental health challenges. And, you know, the aim of Art Centre is to support their recovery journey, whatever that may look like. And that can go up and down depending on the day or the week or the month. So it's a very accessible you know, community space, effectively what we do is we support, we hire artists, we train them up to, as our staff, to be aware of mental health related practice, and they effectively just support people to be creative, and it's a free service. So anyone who's, you know, might be suffering from anxiety, depression, or whatever, can, you know, or addictions, can come to us, and we will support them to be creative, to express themselves and explore what creativity can mean to them. And, you know, it's a real, it can be a challenging process if you're not, if you don't consider yourself an artist.
Yep.
It's like, well, I can't draw, I can't this, I can't that. You know, we, from the age of about, you know, as soon as we get to high school, usually we start saying, oh, well, I can't draw because that person draws better than me. So, you know, and I can't sing. There's a lot of things that we kind of talk ourselves out of.
Yeah.
And the reality is that we can all make marks on paper. We can all make noise. We can all be creative. So it really is about finding that creativity within ourselves and expressing it however you might want to. So, and we've got lots of different ways of doing that. We do have a bit of a focus on the visual arts and crafts.
Yep.
So that's quite a big thing. So that encompasses painting, printmaking, jewellery, glass arts, mosaics, all sorts of things in between, like collage and sculptural things, and we've got a woodworking making area and all that. But we also have a music studio, we have a creative writing group, and we have a ceramic setup, whole studio setup with a kiln and a wheel and all the things you need to do that. And that's very popular as well. So it is about making, and we have this philosophy where, you know, we're a working art studio, so we're not just, you don't come and just hang out and do nothing.
Yeah.
If you're coming to Art Centre, you come and you be creative.
Mm.
And, you know, we're not going to tell you have to do it in a particular way. We'll support you to do it in a way that's meaningful for you and within the resources and the equipment and things that we've got access to. But it's, you know, for some it's like a lolly shop, right? It's just full of materials and equipment and all sorts of opportunities to be creative. And so there's a lot of joy in the space. You know, we have a lot of good times helping people, and it's just so amazing to see people learn, grow, and explore and make mistakes. You know, make mistakes in a safe and supportive environment. We encourage people to make mistakes. That's part of the art-making process. And for us, it all comes back to it being part of the creative process. So it's the act of doing and being creative and giving things a go. And, you know, ideally, you might focus in, get into that, what they call the flow state, which is a little bit like meditating. You know, it's mindful. It's positive for your well-being in multiple different ways. And there's a lot of research on the value of creativity in so many ways. But it is also about people having a chance to express themselves, you know, whether that's in poetry, music, or the visual arts. And, you know, it's quite empowering to make something, to learn a process, to apply that, and to come out with something, you know, that you can take away. People can make things for their whānau, or their family, or their friends, or whoever, or for themselves. And then there's opportunities on top of that. There's lots of different events and workshops and different things that we do that give people further chances to step into that, you know, the artistic world. So that might be having an exhibition, that might be being part of a poetry book, or coming and doing a show here. We have a show on Otago Access Radio as well. Sometimes that involves live people, you know, doing their poetry or singing or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some people, seeing their work in an exhibition up on the wall, framed, looking beautiful as part of a show, that's incredibly powerful. And, you know, to be able to show that to friends and family. And then, you know, sometimes for someone you don't even know to buy your work, again, that's super validating.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's all sorts of little opportunities that arise. And some of those are just about connection, connecting with other people. And that sort of environment of peer support at Art Centre, just by bringing all those people together. And we do work with, throughout the year, a couple of hundred people.
Yeah.
Not all at the same time, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, over a year, it's that support that people get, that connection with others, friendships blossom, and, that continues outside Art Centre. So it is creating a whole lot of support for people, and you know, people move on and go on and do other things. They might, you know, choose to study art further, but even if they don't, they develop an appreciation and a practice that, you know, hopefully will, give them something to fall back on or support their well-being in life generally.
So is that how it started 40 years ago? Like, did it start 40 years ago? Sort of something slightly different, and this is now what it's evolved into, or was that kind of always the underlying premise, and it's just got bigger or smaller or whatever?
Well, it has got bigger, and it has changed over time in different ways. But at the core of it is the belief that everyone can be creative, and that people who are facing mental health challenges should be given the opportunity to be creative. And often they face additional barriers to accessing things that you or I might find a bit easier. You know, if you're suffering from depression, anxiety, or something else, like a significant mental health issue that could be ongoing, you're not necessarily going to be able to join up to that group and just bowl along and, you know, she'll be right. You know, it requires a bit more thought and support. So going back to the history, it is an interesting history. Art Centre was formed in 1986 at Cherry Farm Hospital. It was the vision of the then superintendent, who was a visionary lady. Her name was Julia Aronui Faid. And, you know, she had travelled internationally. She was in Perth in the hospital there, saw what they had there and was like, wow, this is amazing. We need to do this at Cherry Farm. So that's just north of Dunedin in sort of the Waikawaiti area. So, that the old institutional model was still in vogue at the time. Mental hospitals were a thing.
Yeah.
But they were also, they knew that they were going to be disestablished. And there was a whole process of disestablishing those institutions, which is generally a positive thing, you know, getting people back out into the community. But what was going to be there for them when they were out there? You know, some not necessarily much support. So I think Art Centre has helped provide some of that support. But, so there was this whole process of deinstitutionalisation happening. So they set Art Centre up as an independent little unit within Cherry Farm Hospital right from the start.
Oh.
And there was a little bit of support from the DHB. They never thought it would last a year.
Here we are 40 years later.
Here we are. And there was some support from the National Arts Council, from the local iwi out at Karatane, multiple organisations really. And so it was originally called the Creative Expression Unit. And they, you know, did a whole range of really cool things, events. They actually held a conference on arts and health back in the late 80s. It was a really, a brilliant initiative. and they did some really cool events. But there was that transition out into the community. So, you know, when we first started in Dunedin, we were in Filial Street. And since then, we've moved another four times. So there's been a few shifts. And right now, we're in a lovely big space on Prince's Street that is below Hayward's Auction House. It's like walking into a department store of art.
Yeah.
You know, it's so cool. And it's probably one of the better spaces we've had. It's on ground level, which makes it accessible. And a number of people that come to us do have, you know, disabilities or need something that is accessible. And so that's important. It's nice and light, and it still feels part of the community. It's not hidden away too much. Mm. It's a really, really lovely space. So if anyone is interested in coming and talking to us and being part of Art Centre, anyone can do that. There are some eligibility criteria.
I was going to ask about that because it's like my question was going to be how does someone get to Art Centre in the sense of is there a referral from a GP or is there a mental health service or something or is it a like you say an eligibility criteria of someone walking in and kind of going do I fit the criteria? What's the go on that?
So because we're a non-clinical space and they're very much community focused, we try and make it very accessible. So people can self-refer. There is no referral form. There's no referral process in that traditional sense. So people can just come and talk to us. However, there is some criteria because our funding largely has come from the health system. We prioritise people who are receiving support for a mental health or addiction issue. So
people
need to be seeing a health professional of some description. And that's quite broad who that can be. I mean, it could be a mental health team or a counsellor or a peer support worker or a whānau or a navigator, a whole range of things. And as long as they're seeing someone for a mental health or addiction issue, they can, you know, come in and they're over 17 years, you know, 17 years or over.
Yep.
They can come into Art Centre and see if it works for them. We do get a lot of people who are supported to come through mental health teams, through peer support agencies, and various different people.
Because you must be well known within that kind of sphere of people that, you know, that kind of sort of, you know, there's some sort of wraparound care services that already exist throughout Altiposi.
Yeah, absolutely. And we really try and build those networks so that, you know, because people are always changing as well. So it's important for us to go out and make those connections, make sure people know how they can support someone to come to Art Centre. Yeah.
Cool. So it was how long have you been involved personally?
Well, I've been there just over 10 years, almost 10 and a half years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my background is really in arts and events, a lot of event management. So, going into a sort of a more health-focused sort of area was new for me. But it was also kind of similar because, you know, I've worked in a lot of small nonprofits that are art-focused and, you know, we're another one of those. And so there's a bit of learning to do around the mental health sector and what's best practice in the mental health sector, what's person-centred care and the approaches like Te Whare Tapawha, you know, models like that are holistic models of health. There's a lot of things that, you know, to learn to work effectively in that space. But, you know, it's a lot of it's common sense as well. And for my job, I'm more sort of in the office and reporting to the board and to funders and stakeholders and things like that, rather than working hands-on with the artists that come. So we call everyone that comes an artist.
Yep.
Because when they're at Art Centre, they're being creative.
Yes.
And that's all it takes to be an artist. You know, you could argue about whether you're good or whatever, But to us, that's beside the point.
It's kind of subjective anyway, isn't it?
It is,
to be
totally.
Fair. Like, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, and if you create something, you know, we encourage people just to give things a go and not judge them. You know, we're so conditioned to judge and compare.
Mm.
But that's not what we're about. We're not there to judge and compare you. You know, so we're there just to support you, people to be creative as part of their well-being. So that can look like a whole range of things.
Mm. So how many staff do you have there that are helping the artists? Obviously, you said you sit more in the office and dealing with the funding and stuff like that. But how many – you say you trained up artists to come and obviously look after the creative side of things. How many people do you actually have working there on a – part-time basis?
Yeah, so there's seven other staff and not all of them are full-time.
Right.
So there's a mix of hours. And because we're working with a lot of artists, you know, staff who are artists as well, they value their own practice. And so having a not quite full-time hours actually suits some of the staff really well.
Yeah.
So they can continue their practice, which is also good for us. And, you know, some of those roles, there's a range of roles there. We have a deputy director. We have an outreach coordinator. So, you know, the outreach program we have is beyond Dunedin. So when we say outreach, we mean we've got teams in other regional centres who are also doing this work in a different way, because we don't have lots of art centres spaces all over the region, but they use community spaces to help people be creative. And so we've got a team in Oamaru, Wanaka, Cromwell, and we've also got someone we work with in Balclutha. So they're running what we call creative wellbeing sessions, in some cases twice a week in those spaces. And, you know, those regions, you know, they have a need for people to have spaces like this as well, you know. And a lot of times, you know, the regions are poorly served in terms of services. They just have less people, less services.
Yeah.
And so being able to provide, you know, creative wellbeing sessions in different places is, you know, I think it's a really important way for us to share the value that we, you know, the things that we're doing at Art Centre on a broader regional level. And, you know, they really appreciate it, and those communities, you know, really value it.
I've got some more questions for you. Before we do, I'm just going to get another quick word from our wonderful sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
So I've got a question. Let's say I'm wanting to use the services that are provided by Art Centre, and I sort of turn up and I meet the criteria, and I'm like, so great. So what are your hours? How does it work? Like if I come in and sort of like go, I want to make a jar, you know, or pottery or something ceramic. Is that something that I can come in and do like every minute of every day that you're open, or is it done, or do you run sessions? Do you have classes? Is it purely supervisory that the staff are there, or is it are they teaching as well? Am I making sense?
Yeah, like, totally. There's some really good questions there. And, you know, I think we do need people to be reasonably independent, but we expect people to need a bit of support when they start. And we run what we call creative sessions throughout the week. So each day of the week, there's one or two different creative sessions. So there's a Tuesday mornings is a creative writing group. Tuesday afternoons is a pottery session. You know, different days will have different focuses.
Yep.
And so we've got different team members that lead that. And that's a really good way for people to start, especially if they haven't tried something before, So we definitely support people to learn some skills and techniques and learn about the materials and equipment. But we're not like a school or a polytech art school. You know, we're not teaching in that same way. So if you come in and say, I want guitar lessons, we're going to say, well, we can help you learn on the guitar, but we're not like a tutor that you can book into each week for a good, you know, like a paid tutor would be.
Mm.
So there are some little differences, but, you know, there's a lot of similarities because effectively we are supporting people to be creative. And, you know, we will sit down with each person and do an art plan with them based on, you know, what their interests are. How can we help that person be creative, you know? So it's a conversation at first, and then, you know, people will often start with a creative session. They'll, you know, meet some other people while they're doing that, which is always positive. And eventually they'll get to a point where they know some basics, they'll start exploring, and, you know, they might want to come at a time that suits them. And most people do come at a time that suits them. So we don't have terms and classes that you enroll for as such. It is quite fluid, and that's intentional because, you know, not everyone is able to, you know, book or commit to a big series of things. So I'm trying to think of the other parts to your question. There's an element of interdependence and, you know, obviously some people will need a bit more support than others.
Yeah.
Sometimes people need a lot of support, and we might have to say to them, you need some support to actually be here.
So they'll bring someone with.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so if they don't organize that, we may ask them to. And sometimes, you know, people may just come for an hour once a week. There's one guy who's been coming for 1 hour once a week for 28 years.
Wow.
So.
But that's like, I guess that's like some kind, that's a, that in my mind, that's like a mental anchor for that individual, which might be a genuine grounding of that person once a week, is that regimented thing in their life, which will be absolutely valuable, like will be incredibly valuable to that individual. We are probably something you and I can't even quantify. I would guess.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt that Art Centre provides a real sense of purpose in different ways for different people, but it's a space of ho'ora, of well-being, and we try and make it so that it is quite holistic.
So that was going to be my next question, was like how much commitment from an individual is required in order to be part of what you're doing. And it sounds like, you know, one hour a week, but when that would be more than enough to be included and be part.
Yeah, for sure. And some people, there's a few people that will come every day, and it's really important for them to come, but they won't be there all day. You know, so it's quite individual, and it depends what else they've got going on in their lives. Some people need help just to get there, in terms of transport or various things like that. So we just try and tailor it to the individual and make it easy and accessible, really.
So this is the big question, right? If you're not charging people for this service, I'm sure you're running on the smell of an oily rag because most charitable organisations are these days. Where's your funding coming from?
Well, it largely goes back to that link with the health system. So initially, the District Health Board, now Health New Zealand, we have a contract, and that contract's been, it has to be renewed all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been receiving a contract, we've had a contract with the health system for our whole history, pretty much. We also have a contract with the Ministry of Social Development to support community participation for the disability community. So they're the main anchors in terms of our support, and we're very fortunate as an organisation, and there's creative spaces like us throughout New Zealand, There's 70 or so of them. And some of them do run on the smell of an oily rag and are fundraising from one year to the next. We're quite fortunate in that we have some stable funding. Even so, there's no guarantees with that. Contracts get reviewed, governments change, new people come in, new managers, etc., at higher levels. And, you've got to be delivering and you've got to be, always looking at your options and hopefully spreading the funding, the income that you receive from more than one source so all your eggs aren't in one basket. So, yeah, we're in a very lucky, positive position. We're well stocked with, all the equipment and materials we need. Even so, we accept donations and we receive quite a lot of donations of art materials from people and from some businesses like, Gallery De Novo and others around town, give us their old frames and framing's really expensive.
Yeah.
So for us to frame a whole exhibition would just be well out of our budget. But by getting all these old frames, some of them with glass and matte board, we make them fit. We make the artwork and the frame fit and we make it look beautiful and it does look good.
And that is where we need to end. Well, we told you we're running out of time. Thank you very much for joining me, Paul. I've learned a lot and I know you already. So I'll have to have you on the show another time as well. But thank you very much for coming.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knight, and you've all been wonderful. Remember, if you're looking for robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield, and a welcoming online community doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News Dunedin on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we'll be talking to Anna Knight, Alliance Party candidate, and look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again, or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast at oar.org.nz, or even on Spotify, YouTube, or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.